Hello and welcome to Technology and the Arts, a podcast exploring the connections between technology and art. My name is Brian Kelly. Back in late August 2012, John Lemazny and I revived our old Technology and the Arts podcast as a series of weekly Google Plus Hangouts broadcast live on YouTube. We've posted these at technologyandthearts.com, and now I'll be making edited versions of the audio portion of these webcasts available in more convenient podcast form over the next few weeks. So we present to you this episode of Technology and the Arts, featuring a conversation John and I had on August 27, 2012. Enjoy. Before we get into any technology in the arts, anything you want to just talk about? You have events coming up.
I have your Android
versus iOS thing coming up.
Yeah, I think that's going to be really exciting. That was a really spontaneous, and this speaks to Facebook. You know, one of the things that has emerged for me is I get really defensive of Facebook because I think that it's an incredible tool for business and for work and for relationships and for so much more. And this is one of those things that happens that would only happen because I was on Facebook. If I decided not to be on the network, it would have been really difficult for this thing to happen. Because all in like a status update and a couple comments, Jamie Herman, who is the I don't think she's director of programming anymore. I think she moved up, but she still gets programs together. And she asked me really spontaneously by tagging me in a status, "Hey, John, would you like to do a talk with Kurt Williams about Android versus iOS?" And, of course, I'm really biased towards Google products in general, which is part of the reason we're on Google Plus tonight.
Yep.
And I think that whole ecosphere and ecosystem is really positive and beneficial. And he believes that the iOS and Apple ecosphere is beneficial. And I can understand why he feels that way, and I think he can understand why I feel this way. But it's really nice to have that conversation and sort of talk it out and say, you know, well, what about this and what about this? Because I think that everybody in the audience has opinions too, but they might not be informed about the various reasons why Android is called open source when there is much of it in the ecosystem that is not open source at all. So anyway, I think it's a fantastic talk. I think it's going to be a packed room. I hope it's going to be a packed room. It's going to be in October at Princeton Public Library. And as a matter of fact, if you go to Princeton Public Library, the website, if you just Google Princeton Public Library, this is being highlighted as an event. So you should not have any trouble finding it. And there's some really fun photos that Kurt and I took. Sort of pointing at our devices and laughing at the other device. So I think it's going to be a good time. And also at Princeton Public Library, I'm going to be speaking on WordPress in October. But again, that'll be listed on their events page, and I'm really excited about that too. Of course, we use WordPress for the Technology and the Arts website, and I use it for about 12 others.
But I'm going to try and get to that.
Great.
At least one of those.
Yeah, please. Go to the iOS, because I know that you have spent time with both, right?
Yeah. But mostly, I'm an iPhone user, so.
You're an iPhone user. How do you feel about this?
You know, I can go either way. And we'll talk about the whole lawsuit thing a little later.
Yeah,
but,
please.
Because I have mixed feelings on it. But
I'm pretty biased about it myself.
Well, my feelings are, again, we'll get to it later, but my feelings are very specific to that case, but it doesn't necessarily mean I agree with what Apple's doing, but I enjoy my iPhone. I have no problems with it. It's, you know, I'm a Mac person, and
I'm sitting here talking from a Mac as well. It's not as though I am opposed to the idea of Apple products. I am very opposed, unfortunately, about some of the philosophies that they represent.
Agreed. So, Yeah, so maybe if we can work that into a tandem with the Random Podcast. And so
yeah, I would love to. Let
anybody who drifts in from the old days of Technology and the Arts.
Yeah, that would be Bill Woodall.
Yeah, that's Bill Woodall. That's my latest podcasting venture, Tandem with the Random. It's an open format interview-based podcast, which the schedule has gotten a little bit erratic lately, but that's what happens when, you know, I have a seven-week-old in the house now. So, yes.
Congratulations.
Yes. My son Graham and I share the same birthday, and that was really crazy. I know we saw each other recently, but I tell you we got pulled over on the way to the hospital?
Yeah, you ended up with a police escort.
Yeah, yeah. Which escorted us from behind, which was weird, but but yeah. So things are a little erratic there, but you know, before he was born, I was able to do a lot of odd things. I caught some Doctor Who filming in New York City back in April, which was really cool. I saw them film some scenes in Central Park. It's kind of funny. I was walking with a bunch of other Whovians, hoping to catch a glimpse. They were on break, on a shooting break when I got there.
Is that what Doctor Who fans are called?
Whovians, yeah.
Whovians?
Whovians.
Whovians, and it's spelled Who.
V-I-A-N-S.
Okay.
I'm not exactly sure that these people were Whovians, because that's the classic term. I mean, the people who go back to the old days were Whovians.
This is the first time I've ever heard this word, and vocabulary is not a light thing for me. And, you know, nomenclature, like, that's cool. I never heard that before.
Oh, so, yeah. But these people, it was funny, because when later on, after this story I'm about to tell, after that happened, and we were waiting for the scene to shoot, they were talking about, I started watching way back in 2006. And I'm like, yeah, I started watching in 1982.
Yeah.
Tom Baker was my first Doctor.
I preferred Tom Baker. Well, no, I mean, out of the new series, which I have not watched much of, I really liked that guy who ended up on Heroes.
Christopher Eccleston.
Yeah, he was great.
Who is going to be... Oh, he's going to be in a movie. But what movie is it? I can't remember now. Oh. I can't remember. I'll have to look that up. But he is going to be the lead villain in Thor.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So, one of the elf king or something, I can't remember his name, but,
Loki?
No. There's he's the Lord of the Dark Elves, the leader of the Dark Elves.
Whenever anybody talks about Thor, I usually just mention Loki. Like I sound like I know what I'm talking about.
I'm sure Loki will be back, but, the Dark Elves are going to feature in the sequel. So anyway, we're at this – I was following on Twitter. There's a website, On Location Vacations, tweets a lot about current filming locations. And I knew they were going to be in New York. I had adjusted my work schedule to try to make it so that I could do work on the road. And I see a tweet that they're filming in Central Park. And I clear off everything. I get on a train. I get up to New York. I get there, and they're on lunch break. But then everybody starts moving to the north part of the Central Park. And all of a sudden, we're coming to the fountain. I can't remember the name of the fountain there, the big fountain. And all of a sudden, I look to my left as we're approaching this kind of pathway intersection. And I see Matt Smith, Karen Gillan, and Arthur Darvill, the three leads of Doctor Who right now, although Karen and Arthur are leaving. I see them walking towards me and towards this group of people I was with, and I'm like, look to your left. and they're like, what? I'm like, just take a look to your left. And they're like, is that really them? I'm like, No, they're robots. It's like, yes. And they went up walking right by me, and I got this great picture of them, and it was going to be cool. I watched them film a scene with Matt Smith and Karen Gillan on the Bow Bridge. And then a couple weeks later, I went to go see, went back up to that area. I watched the space shuttle fly over New York City with on the back of the modified 747. Wow. And then in early May, I went up to New York. I went to the Soho Apple store and saw Stephen Moffat, who's the Doctor Who showrunner.
Oh, wow.
The Sherlock showrunner, with his wife, Sue Virtue, who's also a co-producer on Sherlock. They did a Q&A at the Apple store, which is a podcast. If you go on to their I can't remember what the name of the series is, but there's a podcast series. And it was a Q&A moderated by Alan Sepinwall, who's one of my favorite TV writers. He works for HitFix.com, but he used to be at the Star Ledger. So,
cool.
So it was really eventful, and I justified it to my wife by saying, you know, I'm not going to be able to do these things in a couple of months. So
yeah, and you'll be able to do them again when your boy's a little bit older. I mean, that's one of the really exciting things right now. You know, with a 4 and 7 year old, the 7 year old is raring to go for anything, and the 4 year old can keep up with just about anything. So it's you know, and when you have your second one and your fifth one, they'll all be able to come along.
Well, we do have babysitting arrangements made for September. We're I have tickets to go see. Elsa and I are going to go see Ben Folds 5, the reunited Ben Folds 5 in Central Park again, and then the week after that. I have third and fourth row seats for my wife and I and for my sister and my brother-in-law to see Peter Gabriel.
Oh, you know, I have a book for you.
Okay.
It is a Peter Gabriel. I think I've told you about it several times, and every time I see you, I always forget to give it to you. But I have this Peter Gabriel sort of artistic exploration thing, and it was something that he produced that was really interesting, and I think Peter Gabriel is neat. I mean, I like him, but I know how much you love him. I really want to get this thing to you.
Okay. It wasn't the exploration thing. I'm trying to think what that could be.
It was literally called Exploration. So there's a photo on the front of it where it was a photo of his face, and it was covered with like ink and then drawn into. It was really cool.
But, I remember he had a CD-ROM back in the day called Explorer 1.
Yeah, that's it.
So, which I had, and I have no idea where it is. It's been lost for ages.
Well, I have the book to it.
But the cool thing, this is all part of the celebration of the 25th anniversary of So, which actually we're on this is the 26th year, knowing, you know, Peter Gabriel being how he is, he's late with it. But the tour is actually taking place 25 years after the original tour. But it's going to be the same lineup. It's going to be Manu Kashe on drums, David Sanchez, who was a founding member of the E Street Band and a Jersey native. He's going to be back on keyboards. And Tony Levin, who's Peter Gabriel's longtime bassist and one of my favorite musicians ever. And David Rhodes on guitar. So it's going to be a really cool thing to see that same band again 25 years later.
That's cool.
And I actually found out that that first Peter Gabriel show, which was on that So tour that I went to, I had seen him the previous summer at the MC International show that was at Giant Stadium, but my first actual Peter Gabriel concert was July 21st, 1987 at the Spectrum. Mm-hmm. And the July 20th show, the night before, is actually on YouTube. Most of it's on YouTube. But a few weeks ago, I found out that the show that we went to, the 21st, was there's been a bootleg of that for ages, and I managed to download that, and it's kind of cool listening to that all these years later. But he's going to play So in its entirety and, you know, a few other classics, so I'm looking forward to that.
So I wonder if you'd be interested, Not in going. I don't have an extra ticket. But I'm going to a monkey show.
Yeah, and Michael Nesmith is back with them, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't even realize he was touring with the surviving monkeys. You know, obviously Davy Jones is no longer with us, but I saw a Facebook post by him saying how he was preparing for some shows with the monkeys in the United States. I was like, wow, I love Michael Nesmith.
Yeah, he's going to be a
genius.
State Theater.
Yeah, I would love to go, but I think I'm pushing my luck with these two shows.
Yeah, probably.
Basically, and actually, you know, it's a benefit show, and so it would probably be super expensive. I haven't even looked, and I don't even know what the availability is at this point, and it doesn't matter because it's the same night as the Peter Gabriel concert. But I found out last night, one of my favorite artists, Francis Dunnery, who was a progressive rock person. He has this great cover of Genesis, the Genesis classic back in NYC, back in New York City, on YouTube, and it's on a double album he put out somewhat recently. But he's playing in Princeton for the Arts Council.
Oh, cool.
On the 21st of September. But again, it's a benefit show, and I can't make it anyway. So, but yeah, there's just a lot of things I would like to be going to, but it's just not possible anymore.
Yeah. So besides that monkey show, there were a couple things I wanted to talk about. The first thing I wanted to talk about really was this device, this Nexus.
Okay.
We talked briefly about the Nexus versus iOS. I'm sorry, Android versus iOS talk. This is going to be sort of a major component of it for me because I think that this was a breakthrough device. This was something that I think that many users would benefit from. It's a great implementation of Android. It's a very clean version of Android because it's Google's own product. Mm-hmm. And they really like to have these Nexus devices to show some of the other developers how they would do it themselves this is how they would implement it. And so a lot of the issues that you sometimes hear about Android devices, like bloatware or a situation where, you know, there's a whole bunch of applications that don't necessarily belong on that device but are there because they're trying to fill out their bullet list of things that come with the device, that's all missing from this. I mean, there are a couple things that are included with the device as far as applications. Like they throw a movie on there. I think it's the latest Transformers movie. But it doesn't get in your way. It's a very clean implementation of Android. And many people who are seasoned iPad users who have tried this device say that this is the first Android device that they feel that is competition for the iPad. And despite the fact that it's a very different form factor, and there have been other tablets that were the same size that did not necessarily do as good of a job of implementation, I think that this is a really great device at a very low cost. It's $200 or $250 depending on the storage size that you get. There are a few drawbacks to it. It does not have a rear-facing camera. It does not have anything but Wi-Fi. It's Wi-Fi only, no 3G. And the storage is either 8 gig or 16 gig. So if you're planning on keeping all of your music on this device and all of your movies and all that, you're going to have space limitations when you try to do something like that. But generally speaking, it's a fast device. It's got the latest version of Android called Jelly Bean running on it. It's also got a newly developed system or series of tweaks called Butter, collectively called Butter, that make it extremely responsive. And it's just a great device. It sounds great. You know, I don't have to plug it into a speaker system in order to hear the kinds of things that I want to hear from it, like movies and music. There are a few accessories available for it already, but because it has been so popular and because they've sold so many in such a short period of time, I'm sure that the developers are itching to get their supportive devices for the supportive accoutrement for the Nexus out there. And I feel really bad for Amazon because the Fire is just no competition at all. Despite the fact that it also runs Android, it's very watered down to be just about Amazon. And this has a lot of the things that the Amazon device has, such as a store that backs it, that offers movies and books and all those things, magazines. But it just happens to be Google-centric as opposed to Android or Amazon-centric. And while the stores are different, they're comparable. And as far as apps are concerned, there's a great number of apps, just like iOS. This is not to say that the iPad is a bad device, but Android has a truly great device now in the Nexus 7 and at a great price point.
Cool. Yeah, I don't have any fancy devices like that, except for my iPhone.
Yeah, but $200.
Yeah, I
mean,
might be persuaded.
You spend $200 on coffee.
Probably.
So just ignore coffee for a couple, you know, I'd say 3 weeks for you.
Well, yeah. Well, actually, I did purchase a something in addition to my gear. It's not anything ridiculously fancy, but I was watching Graham one night, and he was kind of fussing. He wasn't really falling asleep. And the way we've been doing is I've been trying to get Allison some sleep. So I'm having him downstairs, and you know, I'll have him downstairs so, you know, his crying doesn't keep her up while she's up in the bedroom. So one night I was like, oh, you know, I had some inspiration. There was like this old song that my friend Christian Beach and I had done in our techno rap days, and London Olympic opening ceremonies had me really the music by Underworld and High Contrast, and there were a few other electronic acts involved there. Really got me excited about electronic instrumental music again. And there was this one song, I'm like, you know, I'd like to update that and hear what it sounds like and do it in GarageBand. So, but I had to bring my Alesis, you know, 2S6.1 synth up and hook it into my MacBook, and it was just too bulky. So I was looking at little MIDI controller. So I got this little Alesis 25-key controller keyboard.
So did I ever show you my Oxygen 8?
No.
Yeah, this is a really inexpensive device, great MIDI controller, and USB powered.
Yep.
Yeah. Beautiful.
Yeah, mine's USB powered. Has the, you know, the input for the sustain pedal, which was a big thing. I saw some that just they had a button. I'm like, what am I gonna do with a button? I want a foot switch.
Yeah.
So, but I. You know, I was trying to find a cheap one, and my musician's friend, it was like $60. So
great price.
And that included shipping. So I went ahead and bought it. So now I can have like a little setup while I'm watching Graham in the middle of the night and work on some music.
That's cool.
So yeah, I want to get some electronic music together again. That's my latest endeavor.
Yeah, I'm excited about a lot of the music that's coming out right now. But electronica is definitely what excites me.
Yeah, I know you listen to the dubstep stuff, but...
Yeah, I do.
I like the chill wave stuff. That's I'm a little more in tune with. But the dubstep, some of it's okay, but I can't get into it on a...
We will have to spend a little time in a different non-public hangout, and I'll try to turn you on to some really great dubstep.
Yeah, I don't know if that's going to work.
We'll see.
Because remember, I still have, you know, the singer-songwriter mentality. You know, just because I dabble in electronic music, I you know, I don't consider myself really a singer-songwriter either. Especially not a singer. But,
Well, they would argue that, that there is songwriting going on.
I know. There's something. I wouldn't say it's writing. It's construction. And there's a talent in that. And there's a skill in that. Is it musicianship? Is it something else? I don't know. I don't know what the...
It's very funny that you say that, because one of the first things I ever heard was a Skrillex song. And at the end, it's rock and roll. And at the end of the song, there's this little clip of a guy who sounds sort of angry, and he's saying, you know, nobody here is a musician because nobody knows how to play a guitar. And it's such a, you know, you just came out of a song that was high energy, and it was melodic, and it had emotion to it and a story. And to listen to it and say that it's not music leads you to begin to make comparisons with other things in the past that are more traditionally known as music, but have the same limitations, or have the same, you know, people who were parts of orchestra might have felt that troubadours were not music, you know, because it wasn't difficult enough, or it didn't have enough overlay, or whatever the case might be. And as time moves on and music becomes more centralized around a single person who's just sort of like taking their idea and exposing it through either electronic means or setting up with six different instruments, maybe like you do, and playing it all and sort of constructing this yourself. Yes, it's construction, but I think that it's also music making and songwriting, and I would love to have that discussion with you, because I think that it's nuanced, the discussion.
Well, I don't question it being music. I just question whether or not it should be categorized as musicianship as far as the skill. I don't know what's called.
But just that statement has a conflict in it.
I don't think it's fair to compare somebody who's a classically trained musician to somebody who makes music solely with, you know, through electronic means. Now, that again, though, I'm a hypocrite in that, because everything I do is electronic.
Yeah, are you classically trained?
I'm a keyboard player. I'm not a very good keyboard player.
Are you classically trained?
No.
Does that matter?
No.
Yeah. I'm not a classically trained technologist. Do you think anybody doubts that I know about technology?
Yeah. I don't know how to describe it. I'm still trying to rationalize how I feel about it. I know there's a difference, and
I think that yours is the default view. I think that many people hear contemporary music, especially things like dubstep or bass and drum, and they hear the repetitiveness of it, and they say, what happened to Bob Dylan?
Yeah. Well, here's the thing, though. When Skrillex was up for Best New Artist.
Yeah.
I'm fine with that, because it's artist, and I think it's an art. But if you were going to – if it was Best New Musician, then I would have a problem, because –
But you said – this is what is interesting. When you said that there was a –
I know. To me, there's a difference between the word music and the actual skill of playing music. I need a new word to describe it.
It's also funny, because there are certain electronic artists who agree with you, who say, I could sit somebody down for 15 minutes. This is something that Deadmau5 says all the time, but I think he's going for shock. He says, I could sit anybody down for 15 minutes, have them bang in rhythm on my keyboard, and they could make a hit that would blow mine away. You know, and there is a problem in that and an opportunity.
Right, but as somebody who dealt with electronic music back in my teenage years, I mean, I remember Tom Petty, you know, saying something in an interview, something to the fact of, and that's why I didn't like Tom Petty for a number of years, but he's like, oh, you know, it's so easy these days to just, you know, take out a keyboard and hit a button and play music. And here we were, my friend Christian and I, back, you know, we had, you know, samplers and synthesizers and drum machines and sequencers, and it was like, it was a nightmare to get that stuff to work properly all the time. I wish we could just press a button and have music come out.
So this but, is yeah, also...
We still had to write the stuff. We still had to play the stuff into the sequencer. The sequencer was just a means of capturing a performance.
It's a tool.
Because it was just two of us.
It's
right.
A tool.
So I understand that. I understand...
This also extends to two other areas that I want to talk about. One is the arts itself, the fine arts, like painting. There is the same bias towards traditional painting. Like, people think, if I say the word painting, most people, especially those who have not been introduced to modernism, think about a 16th century, you know, painting of a woman in a dress. And it means all these things that it means, and it has history attached to it, and it's legitimate because of its age. Comparative to somebody like Mark Rothko, who essentially did minimalist color field painting. And for anybody who does not understand what goes into that process, they are going to say, Mark Rothko is shit, and the 16th century person that I can't even remember their name is the epitome of art. Or Jasper Johns, who uses stencils and made the American flag and really beautified everyday objects in pop art. One of my favorite artists. Or Bruce Nauman, who takes the everyday and makes it special again and again and again and again. Or a street artist, somebody who goes up to a wall like Banksy. And makes incredible things happen for so many more people because he's doing it in the street. And it's been given legitimacy because people have come along and said, this is truly art. But there were a lot of people who look at Banksy and say, you're making a mess on that wall. And you shouldn't be doing that because you didn't have agency to do so. This is my problem with arguments against electronica. You know, it's the same kind of thing. It's saying because it was not as difficult as learning to play the guitar, it somehow has less value or legitimacy. And I would suggest that effort does not mean legitimacy. Effort just means effort.
I don't have a question with the legitimacy or the artistic nature of it. Or that it's even music. I mean,
you said that they're not musicians.
But they're not in the I know we're talking about the traditional sense of the word, but to me a musician is somebody who has some kind of mastery of a musical instrument. And now is it
mastery of a musical instrument?
A computer
a musical instrument.
A musical instrument.
A musical instrument. The computer can be a musical instrument.
I'm talking of classical, traditional musical.
You are talking of classical tradition, but this is a musical instrument.
It is.
And it this is the key device that and somebody who's doing electronica would use. And you just held one up.
But I know, and I said I'm a little bit of a hypocrite because I work exclusively electronically. But I try to... You know, in a lot of my stuff, before I went into this recent drive to create electronic music intentionally, you know, I've in my more recent years, I've tried to make things sound more organic. Lots of piano sounds.
It can be difficult with electronica.
What was that?
It can be difficult with electronica to do that.
Yes.
But it can be done.
Right, but I mean, I use electronic instruments to create as natural sounding songs as I can. But now I'm trying to go back to doing things that sound intentionally electronic.
And I've heard a little bit of your repertoire. I think of it as rather electronic. No, and I don't mean that as an insult. I actually mean that as a compliment. But I think that you might take it as an insult in a ridiculous
there is, way. Well, there's some electronic nature, but, you know, a lot of it is piano-based. You know, I try to, and that wasn't always the case. Like I said, back in the late 80s, early 90s, I was listening to Nine Inch Nails earlier today. I haven't listened to Pretty Hate Machine in ages. And
it's a great album.
I know. And I remember seeing him on that tour at the Green Parrot, the long-lost Green Parrot in Neptune, New Jersey.
Yeah.
Little dive that I used to play at. You know,
I saw him at the Spectrum before they ripped it down, or before they made it whatever it is.
I mean, I was in the Green Parrot during his sound check, and he had his clothes for the gig in a supermarket bag.
Is Trent Reznor a musician?
Well, Trent Reznor's classically trained, so yes, he is.
That's a threshold for you.
Those tools.
All right.
I think I have to know more about the artist before I make a blanket statement on it.
I don't.
Like Skrillex could be, you know, he might be able to play, you know, a Beethoven or a Bach piece. I don't know.
But I don't know how important that is to the end product of music.
Like I said, I think I need to find a new word to describe what they do in the music sphere.
Okay. I
don't know. Maybe I'll come around, but I look at, you know, my friend Christian, who I respect immensely, and Christian Beach, who's a singer-songwriter, and, not classically trained, obviously, but I mean, he's taught himself how to play guitar and piano and everything. I mean, he played a lot of the instruments on his debut solo CD. He played drums. He plays bass. He can play almost anything.
Is Christian Beach a musician?
He's definitely a musician.
He wasn't classically trained, though. He probably can't
play Bach. I don't have to say. It doesn't have to be classically trained, but somebody who has either gone through training or trained to play an instrument or several instruments in Christian's case and in other cases. And I just don't see the talent level equating with somebody who can do that to somebody who can put snippets of other material also. And
what if it's original material, or what if it's, I mean, and why does talent equal value? I could name you five songs right now.
I don't have any argument with the value of the music. I can listen to a dubstep song if I enjoyed it, and I can listen to Johnny Cash and enjoy it.
Yeah.
Or The Band and enjoy it, or Frank Sinatra and enjoy it. But to me, it's just the talent level. I need to find a new word for what that skill is for people whose music career is based on mostly programming rather than performance. You could say it's performance, but it's...
It's performance. As a matter of fact, I would say that the classically trained artists would have a harder time trying to achieve the performance of an electronic artist, because all the great electronic artists, including Skrillex, including Deadmau5, the real energy of what they do, I think, is when you're in front of them. I mean, all you have to do is watch one of those concerts or be at one of those concerts, and immediately you know how different that experience is than most shows.
I've seen that,
where
though.
The whole place is just like, oh, jumping.
Yeah, because but those people are that much into it, but I don't see that in the performance. I see that as the audience reacting to what they enjoy. But to me, I mean, there is no greater live performer than Peter Gabriel. I mean,
I'm not denigrating Peter Gabriel by comparison to Skrillex or Deadmau5 or any of these artists, but rather just trying to indicate that there are different values to different artists, and not necessarily their classical training doesn't necessarily come into play compared
to the word classical. I was
no,
just using that as an example.
Good word.
But you know, it's the training, it's the discipline of going through learning how to play an instrument. And, you know, my thing is, Christian can go to a park with a guitar strapped to his back and entertain people, and I can't even do that, you know, and Skrillex can. He can't carry a computer on his back and plug into a tree at a park, and, you know, there's something romantic in traditional about that aspect of it.
I don't know if there's going to be a Skrillex unplugged.
Yeah.
But
and now a piano player can't take a piano, you know, can't strap a piano to his back and take that with him either. But there's just something different about that aspect of it.
So one thing I should have mentioned is that I have to leave you at 9 o'clock, which means that I've gotten
everything
about 10
you talked about. Why didn't you mention that at the beginning?
I have about 10% of my list that I've gotten through.
We didn't even talk about the Apple thing.
No, I think we're going to have to do this like once a week.
Oh, so we're basically back to doing a podcast.
Yeah, it'll be like one topic format. I think it'll be good.
See, this is where Tandem with the Random is nice. I say like 5 things about, you know, what's going on in my life.
Well, that's fine, but I can't do that with you every week.
I know.
Because that's your thing with other people.
Well, we spent 10 minutes just trying to get the microphone to work.
I got it to work, though.
It's 9 o'clock.
It's 9 o'clock. I have to.
Yeah, yeah, thanks, Stephen Hawking.
I keep him here so that he can tell me what time it is, because he's a time lord. And the only other thing I wanted to plug was that I have a new blog that has about 50 posts on it that has been tracking my nutritional progress over the last 4 or 5 months, called diaryofcalories.wordpress.com. If you are on Facebook or any of the other places and connected with me, you probably have seen posts from it. But if for whatever reason you're watching this video and this is the first time you're meeting Brian and I, diaryofcalories.wordpress.com has some, I think, interesting posts about nutrition, calories, the struggle of weight. I've lost about 60 pounds or so.
Excellent.
Thank you. And interesting discussions, opportunities for comment, and I would love to talk to anybody who wants to talk about those topics. So thank you so much, Brian. This was a lot of fun. I can't wait to see you next week.
Okay, see ya. Bye. Take care.
That concludes this episode of Technology and the Arts. For more information about the podcast you've just heard, please visit technologyandthearts.com, like us at facebook.com/technologyandthearts, follow us on Twitter at @tech_arts, and subscribe to our YouTube channel at youtube.com/technologyandthearts. Thank you for listening. Take care.